Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Last month in Toronto, an HIV-positive man was convicted of first-degree murder and 10 counts of aggravated assault for transmitting the HIV virus to two female partners, both of whom ultimately died of AIDS. Now, he is the first person in the world to be convicted of first-degree murder for exposing a sexual partner to HIV, and this conviction is part of an upward trend around the globe in prosecutions for HIV transmission of one sort or another. And while some find this absolutely just, others doubt that people who spread HIV should go to jail at all and argue that the criminalization of people with AIDS is bad for everyone. My next guest is one of those doubters. She is Regan Hoffman, editor-in-chief of PAWS and PAWS.com, a publication that chronicles the HIV epidemic in the U.S. and around the world. She has also written a memoir called I Have Something to Tell You, which will be out in September. Regan Hoffman, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so much, Brian. Thanks for having me on today.
So first, tell us more about the details of this particular case, the first murder conviction for HIV transmission. I read some of the details, but do you want to go more into it? Who did what to whom?
Well, it was a gentleman who was aware of his HIV status and allegedly intentionally wanted to infect the women that he was with.
Oh, he didn't just fail to disclose. He intentionally set out to infect people.
Correct. And in a situation like this, I agree with the UNAIDS recommendations on who and who should not be criminalized with HIV. If someone is aware of their status, they intend to give it to someone else, and they actually do transmit the virus, that's obviously not an acceptable situation. But what's happening is that a lot of people who do not know their status and do not intend to infect someone else are also being criminalized for this act. And this is causing a problem because it's actually backfiring in terms of our ability to stop the spread of the disease.
So there are at least a couple of categories here.
Yes.
And let's unpack this.
Yes.
So here's a guy who knows his status and intentionally sets out to infect people.
Correct.
Then there are people who know their status and just fail to disclose when they sleep with people they want to sleep with.
Yes, and they may or may not be using condoms. They may or may not have a detectable viral load. So even in that situation, there's gray area as to whether or not they could possibly even transmit the virus.
There's a gray area between knowing your HIV status and having a virus that can be transmitted?
Well, if you're positive, if you use a condom and you're on antiretroviral medications and your viral load is undetectable, the chances of you transmitting the virus are almost nil.
Okay.
Not to say that the person who you're sleeping with doesn't have the right to know. They do.
And then there's the category that you brought up of people who do not know their HIV status.
Correct.
You're saying some of them are being criminalized?
Yes. In fact, people who were unaware of their HIV status at the time, for example, later, and this is parallel to my situation. So I became HIV positive in 1996, didn't know I had the virus, went to the doctor, got a test, found out that I was positive, went back to my previous partners and informed them of the fact that I was HIV positive because I wanted them to be able to get medical care and save their lives.
And there was a big debate right around that time about contact tracing laws, whether people should be required or doctors should be required, you know, as an agent for the patient to find the previous sexual partners, to name them and then find them and then inform them.
Right. Regardless of that discussion, I felt it was my personal obligation to let people know that they had a health concern possibly. So I went back and it turned out that the last person, the most recent person I had been with, was HIV positive when he was tested, and all the people before him were not. But even so, while it's almost 100% sure that he gave it to me because of my history and the fact that the other partners were not positive, I can't absolutely guarantee that he was the one. In fact, that's part of the problem with the criminalization of people with HIV. It's a he said, she said, he said, he said, she said, she said. And also, how does one know exactly what went on in the bedroom, and how does one know, you know, for example, let's say these women were with this man who was positive, knew it, intended to infect them. That's one side of the equation. What if they were with other people in between or during at the same time who also had HIV, who didn't know it, who gave them the disease? How could you prove definitively that he was the one? It's an arguable situation.
Right. So that would be up to a court of law. But are you arguing that nobody who transmits HIV should ever be held legally accountable to that for that, including even in this case?
No, I'm not at all. I absolutely think that there are certain cases where people willingly, knowingly, intentionally, and actually transmit HIV. That's not something that should be left unaddressed. However, those cases are the extreme minority. They are fringe cases. The majority of the cases that we're seeing, the trend around the world, is not that. There are 1.2 million people living with HIV in America. A quarter of them do not know that they're HIV positive. That's where the HIV is coming from.
What's the most common scenario of criminalization or criminal charges, let's say, in connection with transmitting HIV?
Well, unfortunately, it's starting to really vary. That's the problem. So you're seeing people who, you know, for example, there was a case in Texas where a man spit on a police officer. Now, again, there was intent there. He expressed the urge to give the police officer HIV.
I know about that case, and that's kind of absurd because there's never been a case of HIV documented as having come from spit.
Correct.
Or saliva of any kind.
Correct. But the fact of the matter is, now there was intent with absolutely no possibility of transmission. What do you do in that case? Obviously, there's a person who isn't doing the right thing. That's not good. But the thing to remember about criminalization is that when we criminalize people with HIV who did not know their status or did not intend to transmit the virus, what happens is it prevents us from being able to stop the spread of HIV because it deepens the stigma. People are less willing to talk about it. They're less willing to get tested. They're less willing to go on treatment and lower their viral load, which can reduce the risk of transmission regardless of their behavior or willingness to disclose.
You said less willing to talk about it. That's an important thing to discuss here, I think, because if the law enforces disclosure by people who know their status before they have sex with a partner, you're saying it could also backfire and have a chilling effect and
right.
have more people, what, fail to even get tested because they don't want to know so they can't
sure.
be held accountable?
Exactly. That's exactly the point. And you have to ask yourself, as a member of this society, what are we trying to do? I mean, obviously, people who do bad things should be punished. But if we want to stop the spread of HIV, the most effective way to do that is to not criminalize people with HIV. We have to also compare the situation to other disease categories and other viruses. Human papillomavirus, Hep A, B, and C are viruses that are sexually transmitted. Yet we happily talk about, you know, the Gardasil vaccine on the morning talk shows, and we have never even considered criminalizing someone for transmitting HPV, human papillomavirus, to a sexual partner without disclosing. That virus, some strains of it, can actually lead to cervical, anal, and penile cancer, which can lead to death.
Raises the risk of cancer. So it
right.
may, if that person actually got cancer and died, presumably the person who slept with her with HPV and didn't disclose and knew it
right.
could also be charged with murder.
Right. Why is that not a parallel situation? Or, for example, I think we also need to talk about the culpability of both people. This is we're talking about consensual sex here. So even if there's I ask a partner their HIV status and they really are telling me the truth. Let's say they got tested that morning for HIV and for all intents and purposes they have a negative HIV test. Well, it's possible that they could have slept with someone recently and their bodies had not yet had time to produce the antibodies to HIV, which would have given them a positive test result. So they could have been telling me the truth, not wanting to hurt me, and I could still get HIV. So every person who ever has unprotected sex has to get tested and has to take responsibility for the risk.
And we'll take your phone calls here on the case to start out of this man in Toronto who has become the first person convicted of murder for knowingly transmitting HIV without telling the people that he slept with that he had it. Apparently, he was actually out to infect people for its own sake, and then on down the line from there to different kinds of cases that surround the criminalization of people with HIV. We're talking to Regan Hoffman, editor-in-chief of PAWS and PAWS.com, the publication that chronicles the HIV epidemic in the U.S. and around the world. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Seymour in Forest Hills is thinking of a possible parallel case. Seymour, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. What happens if a person has a virulent form of tuberculosis? And should that person who gives it to another person be criminally liable?
It's a good question. You know, with H1N1, if I go onto the subway, theoretically, I could inhale it and get it. So the person that has it and knew it and decided to go to work that day, should they go to jail for 25 years? It's a good question.
Seymour, thank you. Chris in Piscataway, you're on WNYC. Hello, Chris.
Good morning. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to be quick. I heard you and the guest mention that the first person was prosecuted for murder through, you know, transmitting the AIDS virus was in Canada, but I don't think that's true. I remember clearly looking at Court TV, and maybe one of your listeners could refresh your memory also, could help me out with that also. At Court TV, there was a doctor who had a girlfriend. He was married, and she wanted to break it up with him. What he did was he went to one of his patients at night. He visited the guy, said he was bringing him some, some medication or something. But what he did, he took the guy's blood, he rushed over to his girlfriend, infected her, and he gave her it, and she went to the police. And how they proved it was they checked the virus for the DNA for the guy, something like that. They
so you're saying like he was also convicted of murder?
He was also convicted, and I remember clearly looking at that on Court TV. Maybe somebody else in the audience remember that.
Okay, so you may be right, Chris. We'll double-check that, and maybe our guest knows. But how do you feel about cases like that? Should these people have been convicted if the facts are true?
If it's clearly proven that they did it deliberately, of course they should be convicted. All this H1N1 and all this, that's different. If the possibilities of dying with H1N1 is not as the same compared to having AIDS. I think if you have AIDS or HIV, the possibility of dying is higher than H1N1. If you have it and you spread it, it's a death sentence because you're doing it purposefully, you're doing it maliciously, and you're doing it to achieve something which you more than likely know is death.
So. Chris, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you. Keep calling us. Regan?
I just think it's important to remember that these cases are very, very, very small minorities. The majority of people who become infected with HIV really have no idea. Again, 1.2 million people living with the virus in America. Are we going to put everyone who infected them in jail? I mean, and how about the 250,000 people who are roaming around the country who don't know that they have HIV?
But let me again take a step back and ask you if there has been any criminal case involving transmission of the HIV virus by someone who did not know their status.
Yes. And in fact, not only have there been cases where the person was convicted not being aware of their status, but also where transmission did not occur. And, you know, that it's really...
What's the argument in that case, or what was the charge? Are you familiar with any particular cases? Because it is hard for me to imagine. They seem like such different kinds of circumstances.
They are.
The kind Chris was calling about, the kind in this Toronto case, and somebody who doesn't even know their HIV status, I can't imagine what the charge would be.
Right, and it would take us an hour to go through the specifics of the cases, but to say that there have definitively been cases where people who were unaware of their status and where transmission did not occur. That speaks to, I think, the hysteria around HIV. You know, 28 years into the epidemic, Brian, we still haven't destigmatized this sucker. And until we do, we are not going to stop it. This is an easily preventable disease. And the hysteria around it prevents us from being able to talk about it, whether that's to school children. It prevents us from doing simple things like green lighting needle exchange or lifting the travel ban. These are also things that will help stop the spread of HIV. But what we have to do is peel away why people feel so hysterical about this particular virus. There are other sexually transmitted viruses, and this one should not be specific to, you know, the stigma should not be just around this one. There should be no reason for it.
By the way, listeners, later this hour, we'll be speaking with Clive Priddle of Perseus Books, who is the man behind their new project called Book the Sequel. Have you heard about this? The idea is to collect and publish submissions for first lines to imagine book sequels. So think of your favorite work of fiction or nonfiction. Imagine what the first line of its sequel would be, and it might be included in Perseus's book, The Sequel. And that's your challenge over the next half hour or so. Post to our website your first lines for book sequels at our website, and we'll read some of them for Clive Priddle later this hour. If you want to take part in that and dream one up, go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehr Show for all the details. But right now we continue to talk about criminal charges in cases of HIV transmission, and Michael in Norwalk knows someone who is involved in such a situation. Hi, Michael.
Yes, hello. Yes, I know a 61-year-old woman who had not had sex for a year and a half, and a year and a half ago was infected. The man who infected her worked at an AIDS clinic, signing people in and informing them of safer sex practices. He did not inform. He did have safer sex with her one time, but did not inform her that he was HIV positive. She did come up, in spite of safer sex, she did come up HIV positive. It was 7 months before he finally acknowledged that, well, yes, he was, but at the time he had sex with her, he wasn't sure. It was indeterminate. He thought he might be.
And were there consequences for him?
As far as I know, there were not. That's I have not been in contact with her in about 3 months, but no, there were not, other than I think she had to tell the health department. But I was just, in terms of somebody understanding the ethics, the morality of, around this man lived this every day. It was his job, and yeah. He did not inform her. And if, to me, that's culpable.
Regan, you're shaking your head like you know this case.
Not intimately, but I think what we're missing, I mean, obviously, again, if someone intends to infect someone with HIV, that's one situation. If they take precautions not to, and I don't know what the situation was, whether the man had a viral load that was detectable or not, whether he had a positive test result at the time or not, I don't know the specifics. But again, we're forgetting there are two people having sex here, and there are two people making decisions. This is consensual activity, and everybody needs to understand that if you ever have unprotected sex, you are at risk for a variety of things, including HIV. No condom manufacturer has ever claimed that a condom is 100% effective. We're grown-ups, and in this country, we tend to want to blame the system, the other person. I think taking personal responsibility should be part of the equation.
Now, here is Edwin calling from Berlin in Germany, who says he is a writer and advocate who tracks criminalization of
yes.
people with HIV. Do you know Edwin?
Yes. Hi, Edwin.
Edwin in Berlin.
Hi, Regan. Yes, hi. Well, I'm calling to support Regan's point of view and to point out that there are many countries around the world that do criminalize HIV transmission and also non-disclosure, but that actually the United States has some of the most poorly written laws around this.
Can you give me an example?
I can give you an example of a young man in Iowa who was sent to prison for 25 years 3 weeks ago for one time not disclosing he was HIV positive with a man that he met on the internet, so that there was no discussion of HIV. There was no transmission. So I would say that there was actually no harm done at all. But this person was given the maximum sentence, which in Iowa is 25 years. He also had to register as a sex offender, and as a whole load of other draconian consequences to this. That seems to be, I think that's actually a violation of someone's human rights. To be sent to prison for 25 years for one-time non-disclosure. That is quite typical of some of the poorly written laws, which mm-hmm. Seem to conflate the idea of intention with simply not discussing your HIV status.
Right.
And these cases are often reported as intentional transmission because the law
right.
recalled those things.
Although I guess in theory a law could be written that surrounds criminal negligence for people who fail to disclose.
Well, but isn't there also arguably negligence on the part of the person who's engaging in consensual unprotected sex? I mean, they are also not. I mean, are we going to start criminalizing mothers who don't vaccinate their children against, you know, diseases that we have vaccines for? I mean, there is some responsibility on both sides. And I do think that the person who's HIV positive has a responsibility, if asked, and, you know, to protect the other person. But I
if asked.
Pardon?
So you're putting the opt-in, opt-out burden on the partner.
Well, I can only speak for myself. Having lived with HIV for 13 years, I disclose 100% of the time up front. However, I want to take this back to a large a large point. If we want to stop HIV, why are we putting people in jail? Because we want to stop the spread of HIV. The best way to do that is to actually not criminalize people, because then we will see more people willing to come forward to get tested, to get onto treatment, which can lower their viral load, which makes them less infectious, and we'll be able to care for them and keep them alive.
Here's a chilling story from the other side, from our website. Somebody wrote, I work with rape victims. I've had two cases recently where the victim was HIV positive. One told the assailant, the other did not. The one victim was gang raped, and she was afraid to tell the men she was positive during the act because she worried that they would be so angry that they would kill her if she disclosed. She was then afraid to tell the police officer that she withheld this information, and so she told the officer that she disclosed. Ironic that she was afraid she would go to prison.
That's amazing. But that speaks to the stigma that surrounds this disease. I mean, here's a woman who's been attacked, who cannot even, you know, who's more worried about being killed because of people's perceptions around HIV while she's being raped by multiple people. That speaks to the core of the issue, I think.
It does speak to the core of the issue. It's a horrible, horrible story. And last thing then, do you think that people should be tested as a matter of routine? I think there's discussion, or there's some doctors who, when you know, if you go for an annual checkup and you get your blood work done, that part of that routinely should be an HIV test.
Yes.
And that basically everybody in the course of their routine health care should get an HIV test. Do you agree with that approach?
I think it's very simple. This is a biological agent that could be present in anyone's body. Everyone who's ever had unprotected sex ever should be tested for HIV. And we must be careful not to discriminate or stigmatize or criminalize people with HIV if we want to encourage people to come forward and get tested. Because if we're going to lock people up for their HIV status or keep them out of this country or not provide health care for them, why would anyone want to go get tested? So we must make it a possible, plausible thing and encourage it to be as normal for people as getting tested for, you know, diabetes or high blood sugar.
But the guy in Canada who knowingly infected people and purposely infected people should be in jail, or no?
There are always exceptions, and certain people who have the intent to harm other people should be responsible for their actions.
Regan Hoffman is the author of a memoir called I Have Something to Tell You, and she's the editor-in-chief of PAWS at PAWS.com, a publication that chronicles the HIV epidemic. Thank you so much, Regan.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And don't forget, once again, coming up later this hour, in about 15 minutes now, we'll talk to Clive Priddle of Perseus Books, the man behind their new project called Book the Sequel. The idea is to collect and publish submissions for first lines to imagined book sequels. So think of your favorite book, make up the first line of its sequel, post it to our website right now, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, and we'll read some of them to Clive Priddle coming up in about 15 minutes. And who knows, it could wind up in Perseus's forthcoming book called Book the Sequel. But first, we'll get your first day reviews of Times Square and Herald Square with no cars. Stay with us.